Welcome to the Business Bookshelf podcast, where I interview business authors and talk about their newly released books. The aim is that if you listen to this podcast regularly, that you'll get insight into a wide range of business topics from leadership through to innovation, culture, communication, and much more. Today, our guest is Jeff Finney. Perhaps you're one of those business owners who forgets to eat lunch, or if you do, you pick up a sandwich while checking your email. Maybe you haven't been on a real vacation in years and your family time is limited to an hour or two a day. Sound familiar? Entrepreneur and CEO Jeff Finney can certainly empathize with your struggle. He wrote his book, That's It, I'm Fired, in order to aid hands-on business owners in perfecting their business operations so that they can take a step back and finally enjoy their personal lives. Jeff is the owner and CEO of Ultimate Cabinets and The Push Through. With over 15 years in the woodworking manufacturing business, I'll have links to these and links to his podcast called The Push Through. I talked to Jeff about what it means to fire yourself from your business, putting together a vision statement for your business, and putting together SOPs. Enjoy the interview.
Hey, thanks for having me. Good to be here.
It's fantastic having you. Jeff, where am I speaking to you from? Where do you live?
So basically, I live in Collinsville, Oklahoma, but it's basically a suburb of Tulsa. So pretty much Tulsa, Oklahoma.
And is it as beautiful as I hear Oklahoma is? Which part of Tulsa do you live? Is it beautiful there? So, what do you like doing?
Northern Tulsa. It's a great place to live. You certainly don't live in Oklahoma for the weather unless you like weather that changes, on a dime. So the last few days have been pretty cold. A few days before that, it was in the 70s and we were out playing golf. So it's a mixed bag here. That's for sure.
And has it been really, really cold there? Because around the world, they're having, really, really cold weather at the moment.
Where we're at, it hasn't been. We've had a couple snap days that have been cold, but nothing like the East Coast right now is getting slammed with, negative temperatures and everything that they're probably not normally used to. So nothing as intense as what they're going through.
Oh, that's amazing. That's great. So, yeah. Jeff, before we get into your fantastic book, could you give us an overview of your career? How did you get to write the book?
Yeah, so I started business back in 05. So going back a little farther than that, in 01, I graduated from college from Oklahoma State University and went to work in construction management and did that for a few years, worked for a fantastic company that I still just absolutely follow. I love them. They're a great company, but I was always kind of called to run my own business. And so I started a cabinet shop of all things and kind of started from a hobby and, from building furniture and knickknacks and things like that. And then I started getting into building, kitchen cabinets for residential houses. And, so I've been doing that since 05 and, kind of grown our business every year a little bit from there. And, now we're in about 50,000 square foot facility. We've got 50 employees and we're still figuring out a way to grow.
Amazing. I always envy people who know how to, make things or fix things. I've been trying to fix our shower for a while. It's a complete disaster.
Sometimes it's trial by fire. I can tell you that not everything comes easy. So just because you see the finished product doesn't always mean it was pretty getting there.
So Jeff, congratulations on your book. It's got a very interesting title, and that's it. I'm Fired: How Owners, Operators can manufacture their product success and freedom. So with the emphasis on freedom, I haven't interviewed someone who's written a book like you have here. What led you to writing it? Can you give us a brief overview of it?
Yeah, so really the book came about pretty honestly. I write a blog that's really woodworking focused, but it's also focused on the business of woodworking. And so I had these kind of articles to pull from and these comments to pull from. And originally it just started out as I was going to put together a big ebook with all of my blog articles. And then it just kind of developed from there where it's like, hey, we got a pretty good foundation for a book here. And so it kind of developed into a book. And really it's just kind of, it's more of like a tactical guide of how I went from working, in the business to working on the business and how I got there to that position. And that's what really fueled my growth, that we're feeling today, you know, is actually firing myself to put the business in a better position.
So is that actually leaving the business, or as you said, is that sort of being less sort of hands-on and functional and being more of a strategy type of executive role?
Yeah. So, you know, for long-term, long-term outlook, it's going to be to get me out of the business, but right now it's the vehicle that I'm in to get me to that spot. So we're, you know, consistently I sit back and I look at what I'm doing in business right now and what can I offload? What can I fire myself from to put the business in a better position to work and operate without me? And I don't have any ambition to stop anytime soon. I don't have any ambition to retire anytime soon, but I want the business to be in the position where I can retire whenever I need to.
So less dependent on you.
That's right.
So you've got a thriving business. You've got 50 people in your business, like you said. Yeah. And when should you start considering firing yourself? Because you can't do it with a small business, I presume. What would be the indicators that you can now start handing over things to different people in the business?
For me, it was decently evident when I don't remember the exact amount of employees I had. I would say it was probably around 8 or 9 employees is when I started this thought process. And really for me, it became evident because I had way too many hats. There was just, the amount of hats that I was wearing on a day-to-day basis was actually holding the business back. And it became apparent to me that something had to change. I just didn't exactly know how to change it. At the time, I remember specifically that I didn't think I had the right employees. I just thought it was the employees' problem. But the more I look at it, it was more of I was the one kind of holding the business up because I was just thinking that I had to be the one to do all these independent little functions.
Mm. No, absolutely. And is your book written for those people who are really stressed? I think I said in the introduction that it's for those people who sort of skip breakfast and skip lunch and work all hours of the day and really find they don't have any time for themselves or their family or playing golf, like you mentioned.
That's right. Yeah. So, you know, relating it back to my personal story, I was just at the point where something had to change because the business that I had didn't reflect the business that was in my head. And, you know, I started business with growth in mind. You know, I always wanted to be a growing business. I wanted to be a bigger business, not just a 1 or 2 man shop. So for me, it was a means to an end. And that's what I knew it was going to take to get to where I wanted to go. I knew what I had today didn't match what I wanted.
Mm. Absolutely. And so you talk about preparing yourself to be fired, which most people don't want to be fired, but
that's right.
You know, you want to be fired. You go through a number of steps in how to prepare your business. And the first thing you mentioned in your book, I remember, is looking at the foundation of your business, why you started the business in the first place. How should people look at that then? They want to reevaluate their business and put it into a different type of setting for them to be less involved.
Yeah.
What should they do to do that?
Great question. Basically, you know, for me, it was looking at the foundation, it's more of like, what did you, when you initially started your business, what did you go to? You know, for me, I was starting with cabinets, but then the more I progressed, the more I got into it, I found myself just kind of being a yes man. And if I had anything related to wood, I was saying yes, you know, I would build it. It didn't matter what it was, whether it was furniture or cabinets or helping somebody reframe a bedroom, you know, it just branched out into too many avenues. And I had to get it back to the core, back to the foundation of like, here's what I went into business to do, and is to build cabinets. That's what we do. And kind of holding true to that line, you know, kind of saying no more often than yes, a lot of times is what it ended up taking.
I was listening to a podcast this morning and he was talking about exactly that, because they were running an NGO and they wanted, you know, they got requests to get involved in all sorts of things, and he had to say no the whole time to go back to what the key focus was on. So that's really important. So you say you need to identify exactly what you're doing and then try and do that to the best of your abilities. Can you expand later, or should you have a key thing that you do?
You know, you can expand later, but that brings, you know, that one of the big points of the book, one of the first points that we talk about is having a vision for your company, which we can get into a little bit deeper here in a minute. But you know, the vision will definitely align you to where you need to go. So that'll answer all those yes, no questions that the business has. So, you know, whether you, if you want to branch out later, really the question is not should we do this project? It's the question is, does this project match our vision? Does it keep us on our path to our vision? And if the answer is yes, well, it's that simple. We do it. But if the answer is no, it's just as simple. We don't do it.
And you say you always wanted a company with quite a few employees. Mm-hmm. Is your vision to grow into, you know, thousands of employees? What is your vision for your business, and how do you construct that vision for a business?
Well, for me, my vision was less about the amount of employees I had. I mean, I had this kind of not a pie in the sky number, but I had this number of like a top line number that I may want to get to someday. But really, for me, my vision in my company is to be the most efficient cabinet component manufacturer in the world. And that's our vision. Everybody knows it. And really, if we need more employees to do that, if we need more growth, if we need more square footage, whatever we need, if it fits the vision and it puts us on that line, then we continue down that path. So if that's what ends up growing us, you know, it's our vision that's driving that.
Mm-mm. And how do you identify that vision? Do you as a management team sit down, or do you as the CEO and owner of the company come up with a vision? How do you put that vision together?
You know, for me, it was a collaboration effort a little bit with some of the employees, but really for me, it was something I felt I had to be the main, I had to come up with the main points of it. And at the time I actually had a business, I still have the same business coach, but he pushed me very hard at like, you got to have a vision. We got to come up with this vision. And I never, at the time, I didn't fully understand the strength of it. Mm. And then now I do, but we together kind of came up with like, what are we really good at? What are we not good at? And it just kind of ended up being a board game of words, you know, and we found out, okay, we were really good at efficiency. We were really good at components. We were really good at this and that. And we just kind of put it all together. And it's like, okay, this is where it's at. And, you know, originally it started as, we just wanted to be the most efficient cabinet component manufacturer, period.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's not specific enough, because you could interpret that however you want. So by saying the world, essentially I'm saying there's no end to it. You know, it's a very unattainable vision, but I feel like a strong vision is that it kind of makes you a touch uncomfortable to say it. Because it's not easily attainable. You know, it's something you're always striving for. That way, no matter where you're at, you're still on that same roadmap to your vision.
I'm a member of an organization who believes in a massive transformative purpose. And so that's exactly what you're speaking about, Jeff, they talk about purpose instead of vision, but I think it's interchangeable sometimes.
Sure, I agree.
Where you've got this massive idea and massive goal that just inspires people. And when people look at that, they think, you know, that can't happen. But if you put it in front of people, then maybe they'll be inspired to fulfill that purpose that you've set for the company to achieve. Do you find that people are trying to become, trying to live up to that vision and purpose statement in your company?
I definitely think so, because it's behind everything that we do. So they start kind of thinking along those same lines. And what I've noticed recently, as I get more employees, and I have to let go of some of that decision-making, you know, those employees are very good about, you know, in fact, one of my employees recently called me out on we was looking at buying a business that was similar to ours, but different enough that it really took some thought. And I was really deep in the rabbit hole of, you know, buying this business and running the numbers and doing the due diligence. And finally, one of my employees that I was talking to about it, that I was hoping would run this division, he said, man, I just don't get the feeling that this, you know, aligns perfectly to our vision. And literally like that, the deal was dead. I mean, because I was just like, you know what? You're exactly right. You know, and I had spent a month and a half, you know, putting the numbers together on this deal and really going through it. And then in 5 minutes, it was dead, you know, because he was exactly right. It's like the answer was not even a maybe. It was a no. You know, it was no, it doesn't fit. And it was dead.
That's amazing. You must be an incredible leader if your people have the freedom to come and challenge you on decisions. So that's fantastic.
For sure.
So I'm speaking to Jeff Finley. We're talking about his really great book, That's It, I'm Fired, How Owner-Operators Can Manufacture Their Product Success and Freedom. So in the book, Jeff, you mentioned something called an SOP, which I'm in the computer industry, so I'm full of acronyms. What does that acronym mean? What is an SOP? And can you talk to us about it?
Yeah. So An SOP is definitely probably started off as a manufacturing term. It's definitely more broad since then, but it's a standard operating procedure. And really, I look at it as it's as you go on your journey of firing yourself, it's your voice continuing in your business on the things that you don't do anymore. So you as an owner have to put in that hard work of making standard procedures for processes. And I make mine, I'm very diligent about it. I make them the same way, no matter what the process is. I break them down into no more than 8 steps. And you leave room for the employees to do it their way. You leave room for employees to learn it, you know, maybe learn a different technique or something. But really, you're kind of giving them the end goal and some of the major steps along the way about how to do it. But you let them kind of fill in the blanks. And sometimes standard operating procedures, I'm sure in some industries, need to be very, very detailed because redundancy is key. You know, like in airlines and things like that, they're very SOP heavy, but they're very detailed. Whereas mine are very broad and they're very open, and it works out very well because it lets the people learn it their way, but it kind of gives them the roadmap of, okay, I've got to do this and I've got to do this and I got to do this. I'll figure out how to do the in-between parts.
Yes. I worked for a small company and they didn't have standard procedures. And I found that really frustrating because every time I wanted to do something, I had to learn it for myself from scratch with nothing to work from, which was terrible. And the reason why there were no standard procedures is because the people in the business had left and taken that intellectual property with them. And so, and so there was a vacancy in it. So, Jeff, do you put together the SOPs yourself or do you review them? Is it really important that the CEO or the owner knows the SOPs that his company is operating with?
Not necessarily. I mean, I put together a fair amount of them. Anything that I'm directly involved with on a day-to-day basis or anything that I'm trying to automate or change or fire myself from, you know, honestly, is something I'll make SOPs for myself. But if I'm trying to say like one of my engineers, you know, we're trying to move him to a different department, you know, I'm constantly going to try to challenge him to make SOPs for certain things he does. That way, you know, we can hand that job off more easily. So, you know, I'm certainly not the only one that does the SOPs in the company, but I'm probably the primary driver behind making sure they get done because it's a very deliberate effort. It's not something that's natural. It's not something you want to do. And some people look at it as, some of the employees kind of look at it as something they're working themselves out of a job, and that's not it at all. It's more of just, it's just creating the roadmap of how this company operates, you know?
Yes. Because how are people going to be promoted if they're indispensable in their current position? And that gets on to our next topic, which is employee retention, which is obviously very important for any size business, small, medium, large. Can you give us some tips and inputs and how to you do employee retention?
Yeah, it's always a tough one, but I feel like we've got pretty good employee retention. You know, I'm not saying we never have turnover, but in general we have good retention. And I think really because part of that's because we have a good hiring techniques. You know, we put ads out depending on the what we're hiring for. We put different ads out in different places depending on the position. And, you know, instead of just hiring somebody based off of one interview or resume, you know, we'll bring in two or three people that kind of fit the job and we'll give them a working interview. So usually our working interviews will last 3 to 4 days.
Wow.
We literally,
because it's a skill that you're testing. Hey,
that's right.
Yes.
The skill is part of it. The skill can be learned. Really what we're trying to do is find out what kind of individual they are. Can they work well with the team that they're going to be put with? That's really the biggest thing that we're trying to find out, is less about the skill and more about the kind of person they are and if they fit with our culture. And basically we put them in that with that team and we just put them out there and just say, you know, here's your leader. They'll tell you how to work in, you know, to do what they do. And then the leader's job is to get to know this individual, because during an interview, it's pretty scripted. You know, it's pretty like, you know, ask a question, they already know the answer. It's pretty scripted. And they're also interviewing with somebody that's a, you know, potentially gonna be their boss. So they're on their best behavior, nervous on their best behavior, you know, telling you maybe things that aren't the case. Or they're hiding something that's on the other direction. They're hiding something where they're, you know, a stellar person and they've got something to offer, but they don't really want to talk about that in the interview. And generally speaking, after 2 or 3 days, the team that they're working it with gets a pretty good idea of the kind of individual they are. And at the end of each day, the team leader and the team members just do a quick little 2 or 3 question evaluation. They turn it into the office. And as long as they want them back the next day, we keep bringing them back the next day. And if they work out at the end of that working interview, we put them on full time. Yeah. And it works out really good. And I feel like that gives us good retention rates, because we kind of find out from the get-go if it's going to be a fit. And it's just like a business decision that aligns to our vision. If that employee doesn't align to our culture the way we are right now, then we don't go on with the hiring process.
Yeah, definitely. So Jeff, part of my job is as sales, and I'm selling into the North America and the US specifically. And part of my job is to know companies. So I look at their financial results, and then I also look at their career page to see who they're hiring, what positions, and that sort of thing. And I was surprised to look at one company, and on their hiring page at the bottom, they said they would consider people with criminal records and things like that. And is that your stance as well? Because I suppose if someone's with you for 3 or 4 days, then is a criminal record still really important to you obviously to know beforehand, but then to assess that employee?
You know, it's definitely one of those things that we look at as an employer. I've never run into the situation very often where that's been a determining factor. Now we have run into the situation where we knew that they had a criminal record. They came in during the working interview, and we found out during that point it wasn't going to fit. It wasn't necessarily because of the record, but their current personality still matched their old record. In other words, it wasn't changed. But it's definitely not. In other words, they won't not make the working interview just because of their past. You know, unless that criminal record's really horrible. Really bad. Right. But if it's just it's a personal judgment thing. But honestly, we haven't ran into that very many times at all to where we've had to make that decision. So I don't know how often people have to make that decision, but I'm sure that's definitely a difficult one.
No, of course it is. And so, we just really scratched the surface of your book. I'm talking to Jeff Finney. And the book's called That's It, I'm Fired, How Owner-Operators Can Manufacture Their Product Success and Freedom. And Jeff, automation is really important. And you mentioned it in your book about areas to automate, which is obviously really important.
Sure.
Which areas should you look at automating within a company?
Well, the automation is always a tough one because everybody looks at it a little bit differently. But with me, with our business, we've got manufacturing, so we've got a hands-on process, so a lot of that can be automated. So that's usually pretty easy because you can find bottlenecks and fix those bottlenecks with whatever it is, machinery or better processes or better or more employees or whatever. But for me, in my journey right now, I'm automating a lot of office tasks, a lot of administrative tasks. We've automated our invoicing. We've automated a lot of things to do with our collections. We've automated inner company things that we use for like production schedules, that kind of thing. We've automated all that. And I'm very adamant on when I automate, there's a few things that I keep in mind when I'm automating. One, the big one for me is I don't put administrative load on people that are not administrators. In other words,
like me.
Right. Yeah. So, if you're a shop floor employee and your job is to run this machine, or build this part all day, your job is not to track your time and write down nonsensical figures just to satisfy some management form. That's not their job. So I automate that process. If that's a piece of information that I need as an administrator, I figure out a way to automate the process to where I can get that information without the employee knowing I'm getting it. In other words, I'm not going to make them scan in and scan out or write down something on a form. It's going to be built into that part somehow, some way, so they don't have to actually do anything other than their job. And for me, that's been pretty pivotal in getting automated, is just staying true to that. Don't put administrative load on the people that are not administrators. And that tends to make it a lot harder to automate it, but it also makes it sticky. I mean, when I get it automated, it's done. It holds true. So,
yeah, no, definitely have to be automated for sure in these days. Now, Jeff, I'm really into podcasts, and that's why I do one. But I really listen to podcasts every single day, and I've got a wide variety of podcasts that I listen to. So I was interested to see that you've got a podcast. I mentioned in the introduction, and it's called The Push Through. And I love talking about podcasts. So what is that podcast? Why did you start the podcast? And can you tell us a bit about it? I'll have a link in the show notes to The Push Through if people want to look it up.
Yeah. So I started it probably a couple of years ago, year and a half ago, something like that. Started it out when I was doing the blog, and I enjoyed it. It was just kind of something I wanted to try. I was like, man, that sounds like really cool. And you know, I listened to podcasts as well, so I wanted to try it. Figured it couldn't be too terribly difficult to figure out. So did a few episodes, just kind of talking head deal. And then I got some interviews, and you know, we've posted about 30 episodes, and again, it's definitely a side project. So, you know, I'll go through a rush where I'll do 10 episodes and then I may not touch it for a few months, but I really enjoy doing it. And I, you know, we're firing it back up now with the book coming out, and going to put some new different kind of episodes on there. And I just usually talk about something to do with business. A lot of them have to do with the woodworking business, but they're very relatable to about any industry. And it's just a lot of fun to get to meet new people and get to see different perspectives of how people run their business and run their operations.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. I mean, I wouldn't speak to people like you in Oklahoma without having a podcast. So
that's right.
I agree with you completely.
That's right.
So Jeff, thank you so much for joining. I really, really appreciate you being on the podcast. Really enjoyed your book. And we've been speaking to Jeff Finley in his book, That's It, I'm Fired, How Owner-Operators Can Manufacture Their Products, Success, and Freedom. And anyone will get a lot of value. I got a lot of value from it. So thank you so much for the book, and thank you for being on the podcast.
I appreciate that. Yeah, thanks for having me here. I really enjoyed it.
Great. Thank you.
All right.
So I hope you, the listener, have found this interesting. If you know of an owner of any kind of business, small to medium, preferred, I suppose particularly, and this person is stressed, they can't sleep at night, you'd never see them, they don't go on holidays anymore, then maybe they should listen to this interview and read the book. So why don't you pass the interview on to them, and they can have a listen as well. So thank you very much for joining. If you want to email me, which people do, my name is Lance and Pepler, and my email address is lance@thebusinessbookshelfpodcast.com. Until next week, enjoy, stay safe, stay well, and thank you so much. Bye-bye, everyone. Bye.